Wake up, America. It's Morning Air with John Morales.
Si, senor.
Sarah Tafoya.
Hey, that's my mom.
And Glenn Leverins.
Bringing the light of Christ to start your day. This is Morning Air. On Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us on Morning Air here. It's Glenn and Sarah in for John today. He's busy preparing the turkey. Well, probably not, but he might be traveling for Thanksgiving and enjoying a day off at any rate. Thanks for joining us today. This hour, we'll have a little Thanksgiving talk. Father Marcel Tyone coming up in just a moment as we talk about gratitude, how that's good for us, how we're called to be grateful and thankful. We are to give thanks after all in all circumstances, and hopefully we have a bit of time to reflect on that this weekend as well. Dave Duran, success and leadership tips, making some of those difficult decisions, you know, going back for thirds or fourths perhaps on some of the things tomorrow, or maybe not, and always love to talk with Dave as well. But talking a little bit about gratitude today, Sarah, when we look at the serious side of Thanksgiving, what do you find yourself most grateful for this year?
Well, a few years ago, we started a little tradition. I got this little canvas thing that we have. It's like a tree, and there's a bunch of leaves. And on the leaves, every year, we write down different things that we're thankful for. And one year, there was like, we had a heater issue, so we wrote down heat. Very practical, because we were just so happy that we weren't freezing the whole day. But that was a tradition that we kind of started, since we're trying to be serious here, I guess. I'll be
don't
serious.
Don't try too hard. Don't let it wreck it for you.
Yeah, I'll be serious. We started that after we lost our daughter in 2016. And so the year after that, when we were preparing for Thanksgiving and I was pregnant again with my son, Benedict, it was very practical. Again, we were very, just very grateful that we were, you know, going to have another baby. And now this year, well, another Thanksgiving with another baby. So we always try to take a moment to try to be serious for a second and write down something on the leaf that's usually very close to us. Sometimes it's, you know, if someone had one year, when another year when someone passed away, we wrote down we're thankful for that person that when they were in our life, for how long they were in our life. So we try to be serious sometimes, but yeah, sometimes those kids, they want to write something silly down. I guess it seems silly to us, but it's very serious to them, you know, like their sock or something that they're like really excited about. And it's like, is there anything else you might be thankful for? But yeah, it's a good time of year. So always happy to try to be reflective there.
Well, even for being thankful for those little silly things like a sock, maybe I have tried to do this maybe the last couple Lents, actually, is to try and, you know, look around where I'm at, try to remember for just a quick moment each hour, and never quite get around to doing it every hour like I would hope, but to give God thanks for something silly. It might be something really big we're moved about at the time. It might be something like the Diet Mountain Dew that gets the throat going in the morning, something that's right there. But that attitude of gratitude is awesome for me. I'm thankful for this radio thing and all that entails. I enjoy this a lot, and the opportunity to learn and share the faith is unsurpassed. Thankful for friends and family, and making that family out of friends as well at times. And then just that God has us along on this great adventure together, and is with us whatever the next steps might be, if they are hard, as we talked the previous hour, but knowing that we can do hard things with God's help, and we can do them even with joy, not just it's hard, but we've always done it this way, it's good for you, but hard things successfully and with joy, and that we can do that. But definitely lots to be thankful for as we talk about gratitude today with one of our regular guests from Narragansett, Rhode Island, pastor at St. Thomas More Catholic Parish, Father Marcel Tyone joins us. Happy almost Thanksgiving, Father. Thanks for being along this morning.
I'm grateful to be just a figure of speech, but I'm truly grateful to be with you today and to be with our listeners as well. So happy Thanksgiving to everyone, and especially to you.
Well, thank you very much. It's great to have you along here. As we talk about gratitude, it really is quite a Catholic and Christian perspective to have, and it can even be good for our mental health to help us look outside one another. But when we are thankful, that does a lot of great things for us. And again, we're not being thankful just for our sake, but funny how that works. When our heart is in the right spot, everything else kind of comes along for the ride.
No, exactly, and I think, sort of gratitude is it's a way of, if we can develop this into a way of life, where we really give thanks, and of course, you know, some of the saints even gave thanks for their suffering. That's a whole nother level. But even let's just start at the beginning, right? So we can be thankful Christ came into our world. There's no situation where he's going to ever part from us or leave us. Like, if we call that to mind every day, that's sort of a disposition towards gratitude. So we have to even go deeper than things or food. Certainly go to our relationships that you mentioned here a few moments ago in your own list there I listened to that was very beautiful. But small and big, right? We need to be thankful for everything. But gratitude does help our mental health, because we're coming from a place of blessing. So can we say, you know, even if we have a really hard thing going on or a terrible situation, you know, we have our stations of the cross in life, we all do, but can we still come from a place of seeing God's blessings? And of course, you know, Catholics, we believe we have the Eucharist, the tabernacle's present, the sacraments are always available to us. So every time we encounter Christ in the sacrament, we leave changed and blessed. So every time we go to Mass, every time we go to adoration, any time we are able to serve someone in a mission or a ministry, or visit someone in a nursing home, or text someone in a moment, a word of encouragement, or really praying for someone, letting them know, we can all just be full of gratitude. So it does help our mental health. I've always, you know, people kind of more in spiritual direction, I think sometimes, you know, it's a good question for all of us, not just Thanksgiving Eve morning, but, you know, do we ask God for more things, or do we thank him more? And I think our prayer life reveals to us our own level of gratitude. So I would say, when we speak to the Lord, are we just asking him to fix something, take us off the cross, kind of like the Christ the King gospel, not reviling Jesus, but hey, please fix this, you know, fix this person, fix this thing. We can have to share all those things with the Lord, but is there still, you know, again, that deep interior in prayer, are we grateful for things? So we can think about things to be grateful for, but do we actually speak to the Lord and recognize everything we have is from him? So there's always, it's always possible to be grateful. There's no circumstance where if we know Christ is the Lord, there's no circumstance where we cannot be grateful. So that's kind of the point, I think, today, to help us all. So we sort of live like every day is Thanksgiving. I think tomorrow people will say more grace around the tables, I hope, and kind of be more, you know, aware of the history of our country and religious freedom for the food we have and the people. And we look at Ukraine, we have heat in our houses, and it's expensive, but we do have fuel, you know, like sort of, you know, at our church a few weeks ago, you know, the lights were flickering. There was a problem with one of our electrical outlets, and it was very annoying through the Mass. The lights were flickering, and I told the people, let's be grateful we have electricity. Let's offer this small inconvenience up for the people in Ukraine who can't even maybe go to their church. Their churches are not there. And let's let our hearts be full of gratitude. I think whenever we miss something, or we don't have something, that too is an invitation to develop a disposition, an attitude of gratitude. And so we really, you know, can we live every day like Thanksgiving? And I think we can. We think we all know, if you know enough about the church, that the word Eucharist means Thanksgiving. So we give Jesus, the Mass comes, Jesus comes to us, and the Eucharist means Thanksgiving. We actually, the Eucharist means Thanksgiving in Greek. It's amazing that that's the word for the Mass is Thanksgiving. And again, we're so grateful God gives himself to us, and we give, he gives, it's a mutual exchange there. So talk about a great Thanksgiving meal. Hope if you're listening, check out your local parish, right? Try to go to Mass tomorrow amidst the cooking. There's no better way to celebrate Thanksgiving, I think, than actually going to get Eucharist, to receive the Eucharist and worship Christ. So if you can work that in, that's great. And if not, you're on the road, you know, I think just kind of maybe a rosary of gratitude. And, you know, as she mentioned too, her little children, you know, thankful for little things. But I think sometimes a child that is innocuously thanking, pointing out something tiny in their life, is a good example for us. Whereas, you know, do we thank God for a hot shower in the morning, or a diet Mountain Dew, like you said? But those things are real, and I think we need to sort of point them out to ourselves, and then speak to Jesus about that, and we will have better mental health. I think we'll be more charitable, and certainly, I think this is the great secret too, if we live a disposition of gratitude, we'll actually be more patient with other people in situations when they come that are challenging. So that's the other side effect. There's so many good things psychologically, physically, health-wise, if we just live gratitude. I think we all know people like that kind of embody a joyfulness about them. They have a joyful disposition, and I who doesn't want more of that, or who doesn't need it, I should say? And we can ask God, and he'll grant it to us, I think, if we ask him to make us more grateful.
And Father, when you mentioned some of those basic things that we ought to be thankful for, we'll hear a lot about Ukraine over the winter here with power being cut by Russian actions in many parts of the country, and some of those very basic things we take for granted. The climate in Ukraine, kind of like the northern U.S., going to be very cold this winter, and if we can give thanks, that helps us to have that grateful heart. Also, if our prayer life with our Lord kind of ends up being ideally maybe almost like that stream of consciousness sometimes. So those little things that come to mind, we can give God thanks for that as we go about our day. As if we're kind of thinking like he's along with our mental journey, even that we can quickly offer up that little bit of thanksgiving. And then even when it comes to technically praying, we're supposed to thank God first before we even dare to ask for things, aren't we?
Yeah, and I think I recommend, you know, and try to practice this myself, but before I ask the Lord for anything, start off with thanksgiving, right? Let's just thank God for the gift of our life, even if we're in a nursing home or, you know, in a maybe a challenging situation anywhere. But we should start with thanksgiving, then reveal our petition to the Lord, who already knows it, but we share with him. Sharing our hearts is part of that love relationship. And then going back to gratitude again, Christ listening to us, Christ being with us. So almost make like a Thanksgiving sandwich, if you will. And the slices of bread are really, you know, a good sandwich has bread on all sides. And I think any good prayer has Thanksgiving on all sides. And it's easy to be thankful. It's so easy to be grateful. But we just have to, again, I think just really delve into that appreciation and expressing that to the Lord. And you're right, though, it has effects mentally and physically. It's just such a good practice, and it gets us closer to Jesus because we realize more and more we thank him throughout the day, even little things. You know, sometimes, you know, maybe I think it happens to all of us. We'll have an aha gratitude moment. You're driving down the street, the sun's setting, and all of a sudden you feel like the vast beauty of nature that God is sharing with us at a particular moment. It kind of stops us in our tracks. And I've seen people have those moments where just something's beautiful. They see another human being doing something or even suffering. There's some kind of intimacy with God that happens in what we see. And I think we just need to practice that throughout the day. And it will change us. I think it changes. God stays the same. He's always grateful for us. He made us. He wants us to. He wants us to know his love for us, and it happens through prayers of gratitude. I think it's the great quick highway to joy is gratitude, and we can have joy amidst pain and tears and suffering and all kinds of crazy things. You know, and I think it's important to try to practice that, and it's a great, again, here comes Advent, you know, right around the corner this Sunday. But maybe we can have a Thanksgiving, try to make every day Thanksgiving and Advent, waiting for God to reveal that to us, all he has given to us, all he will give to us, but also all our relationships and his relationship with us. Again, and sacramentally, I think it's a critical one, and not ever take a sacrament for granted. Again, places in the world where there might not be clergy or freedom to go to Mass, and here we might, you know, we might not really be grateful for the ability even to go to Mass. But again, many of our brothers and sisters in the body are not able to do that. So it's an astonishing reality. So even being able to worship with others is a gift, and we should be grateful for that too. That's a big little one, but I think it's something we probably don't think of too often or as often as we should as well.
Let's look around for those great ways to be grateful. Father Marcel Tyone joining us on Morning Air today on the eve of Thanksgiving as we're looking at ways and reasons for showing gratitude. Hate to blame everything on the culture because we're supposed to be changing that culture, Father, but we do live in a culture of judging, where judging is encouraged, whether it be on social media and criticizing so many things, whether it be in the church, and we've got people criticizing the way the other church does it. It's a Catholic church. What it's doing is legal in the church, but it's different than how we do it, so we don't think it's as good. Talk about how having that grateful heart can avoid falling in that trap to think we ought to be judging everything.
Yeah, you bring up a great point, right? So Christ is the judge, and we need to be, and the less judgmental we are, and the less about other people's things that really, that whenever we're criticizing someone or something, especially on social media, I just urge you, if you have that urge, that we call it really a temptation to do that, don't do it. You know, don't put anything out there. Don't read it. If you read it just enough, it kind of takes your mind off gratitude and takes your mind off Christ. And it kind of sets one up, and it's almost like, I think sometimes if people jump into this social media thing, criticizing everything and everyone in the church, outside the church and everything else, you know, really, it's just so sad because it gets in your mind, and your mind can no longer pray and have peace. And I think one of the reasons people are so stressed and anxious today is they get involved, they get drawn in, almost like a vacuum into these things they're reading online. And, you know, I don't know, I always try to stay on the holy apps, you know, like Hallow or Relevant Radio, things, even what we listen to in the car, if we listen to talk radio or we put on the rosary, that's going to change how we arrive at the next place, right? There's no way it's not going to affect us. So again, you know, put on a station that's combative, listen to people go after each other all day long. And also, it's a sin of pride. You know, we think we're sort of over everyone else, and we know everything that should be done and not done, and who did what wrong. And we just should pray. We should pray for people we see do bad things. We should pray for them. And people we disagree with, too, we pray for them. We've got to keep our eyes on Christ as Catholics, as Christians. We're, you know, the Lord calls us, as you said, to change the culture, but not let the culture change our mind and our prayer life, because the prayer life also changes what's on our mind, kind of flows right down into the heart, right? So we want the heart, when we love God, we love others, we're called to even serve and love people that we don't know or are not our cup of tea, which is really, right, Jesus says, what good is it you love those who love you, right? He's very clear. Some of his lines just really challenge me, and we need to read those scriptures maybe again and again, and just let them confront us with love, not condemnation. But Jesus wants to free us from ourselves, and really, again, I think that if I go back again, what's the thermometer? We can use our own prayer lives to kind of check in on ourselves. So how often do I petition God? You know, how often do I pray during the day versus, you know, how many minutes am I on social media versus praying? That's a great question. You know, and sometimes your phone tells you how long you've been online. And once in a while, I'm like, oh my gosh, I got to get rid of this sometimes and get back to just talking to people and being out and about. And sure, there's great things we study online. We read books and all those kind of things that are good for us, and all those holy apps, I call them. But I want to make sure we're just not, you know, kind of just going down rabbit holes in our mind that affects our prayer. But again, so questions today for all of us, right? How often do we pray during the day versus social media or other activities? And then how often do we praise God and thank Him for things versus asking Him for something? What would you give yourself for a percentage when we pray? And again, sometimes there's something really big going on, somebody loves in a crisis, we're definitely going to plead with the Lord to help them, and that's great. But how about thanking God for the person we love that's in a crisis? If we love them, you know, that, let's thank God. Let's begin the prayer. Thank you, Lord, for this person. You know how much I love them. They're suffering this thing. Please give them the grace to know that they're not alone, that you are with them. Starting with that, and then Lord, you know, if you want to take this cross off for them, then you can do that. But in the meantime, almost like it's a, I call it the Simon of Cyrene approach. Like we're all called to be Veronica and Simon, you know, the two people that one wanted to came out. She's very courageous, Veronica, to step out, endanger herself to give a little comfort to Jesus. And then Simon, who, you know, just was transformed by carrying the cross. And I think, you know, we need to kind of be attentive Simons and attentive Veronicas to others. And how about this for Thanksgiving? You know, today before you go to bed tonight, who's been the Veronicas and Simons to you and to me in our lives? We all have them. And let's start being thankful. Look back, hindsight's 2020, thank for the people God's placed in our life as a sign of His great love for us. That's an easy place to start a Thanksgiving litany, I would say. So encourage all of us to do that today. And then tomorrow, the food and things. And let's pray. Let's not forget those people that are by themselves or feel abandoned incorrectly by God or by maybe brokenness and families and things. We want to send the Holy Spirit to them, too, so they can have everyone can have a happy Thanksgiving if they're praying gratitude. It's an easy path to happiness and joy. So let's try to let the Lord teach us how to do that a little better today.
Father, one more quick question for you here. Sarah started off this segment as we talked about gratitude and trying to start some new family traditions revolving around being grateful, and little kids even helping to figure out what they're grateful for. We're called to pass on our faith to that next generation. What are some great things we can do to help our kids learn, as you know, we all do, but especially the young people, to be grateful?
Well, I think, and again, if your family's uncomfortable saying grace, you're not sure if everyone's a believer, we need to step out a little bit. But Sarah's example, right, her child's happy for a sock, and that's great. But I would open up tomorrow, even during this week, it's kind of, we can get away with praying grace in a mixed religious environment this week. I think we get a sort of a pass to be able to do it. So I think an easy way to do that is to ask everyone, what are you grateful for today? And everyone's got something. And little children especially, they may, it's funny, we might do that around the Thanksgiving table this year, and they might remember that the rest of their lives. Oh, grandma said this, you know, and you learn a lot about other people, and you learn that if a child values their socks, then I should value mine. I put on two socks this morning. I didn't thank God, so thank you, Sarah. You're a little child. I'm going to start thanking God for my socks in the morning, so thank you. But I think that's how it is, so let's just look at everything as gift, and it's called the law of the gift, right? Let's just have some, and it's kind of fun too. Like grace can be, it's holy, it's reverent, but having a little fun with the kids is a great thing, and I think it can be a wonderful exercise. That again, I think in the next few days, give you the challenge, the Relevant Radio challenge. You know, ask the question, prayer of gratitude, if at all possible, around our tables, and let the children show us the way and how to be pure in gratitude. And that's a great thing.
Well, Father Marcel Tyone, we're grateful that you join us on a regular basis here and throughout the broadcast day, for that matter, on Relevant Radio for years. We appreciate that so much, as I'm sure the folks do at St. Thomas More Catholic Parish in Narragansett, Rhode Island. Have a blessed Thanksgiving. Thanks for your presence here. And stick around, more of Morning Air on the way. Dave Duran next. We'll talk a little football and some difficult decision-making, too. That's coming up on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app.
For my babies, for my girls.
Charlie Brown, I'll hold the ball and you kick it.
Hold it? Ha! You'll pull it away and I'll land flat on my back and kill myself.
But Charlie Brown, it's Thanksgiving.
What's that got to do with anything?
Well, one of the greatest traditions we have is the Thanksgiving Day football game. And the biggest, most important tradition of all is the kicking off of the football.
This time I'm gonna kick that football clear to the moon!
Isn't it peculiar, Charlie Brown, how some traditions just slowly fade away?
You know, just once I'd like to see a pro football holder do that when the kicker's lining up there. Just pull the ball away and see what happens. a lot of folks going, Hey, good morning. Morning Air continues here on Relevant Radio. It's the eve of Thanksgiving. Glenn and Sarah sitting in for John. You all ready? You all set? You got any tough choices to make, difficult decisions for this holiday, Sarah?
Oh, man. Difficult decisions. What to wear and whether or not to push what my kids should be wearing. Because, you know, there's always the what you want them to wear, because there's probably going to be people taking pictures, and then what they want to wear, which is loungewear, which is just one step above pajamas. So that'll probably be one of the decisions that we'll have to make. It's not actually too difficult, I guess. There's some bigger decisions out there.
Yeah, but is part of what goes into the calculation on what the kids will wear, is it, you know, how it'll look when things are spilled on it, too? Is that somewhere in between the PJs and the,
yes,
the dress-up clothes?
You're correct. There is that. You need to have a backup outfit, perhaps, for when we're eating the meal, making sure that... I totally forgot about that. Thank you. I'm glad you're here. I'm going to write that down. I need to have a backup outfit.
Well, you know, dad experience, you know, and I was just thinking when you're talking about some of the traditions with gratitude, too, about little kids around Thanksgiving, and actually... our first baby's first real food, other than, you know, baby food, I guess, was mashed potatoes on her first Thanksgiving. And so that was kind of cool. I don't recall the outcome there, if it was something that ended up, you know, on the napkin deal on my shoulder as I'm burping her later or not. But yeah, great times there.
That can't be a big decision. What is the first thing that you feed your baby, right? Especially on a Thanksgiving, a big holiday.
Yeah, give him a turkey leg. That'll keep him busy for a while. But, all right. Well, as we think back to that Lucy and Charlie Brown attempt at the kick, it brings us to football. Always a favorite topic when I get to talk to Green Bay Packer fan Dave Durand. And now the entire time of, you know, almost 20 years we've been talking with Dave has been a great run of success for the Green Bay Packers. They're having a little tougher year. And I thought, wow, with the Vikings this year, they've got that great record. And then they go and lose like 127-0 to Dallas on Sunday. So I'm going to be very humble about that, Dave, as we say welcome to Morning Air. And maybe we'll keep our football talk confined to the peanuts. Will Lucy or not pull the football away from Charlie Brown?
Oh, Glenn, I've been sitting here waiting almost like in a dental chair, like the dentist is about to drill my teeth, knowing that I'm going to speak to you and you're going to bring up football this year. And it is really just awesome that Sunday went the way that it did against Dallas, or I would have nothing to say at all this year. So, yeah, let's move on.
Well, probably just as well that we do, as we have Dave along today, a personal success coach, co-founder, executive chair of Best Version Media, and long, long, long time guest here on Morning Air with great success and leadership tips for us each and every time. And this one can go well beyond saving room for dessert or just having another helping of turkey coming up tomorrow. But talking today about making difficult decisions. And I always remember, Dave, even when making decisions in regular old life here, how you talk about the power of making a decision.
Yeah, it's the most powerful thing in the world. You know, and people would say all sorts of things in regards to that. And I, you know, I really wouldn't debate them. You know, God is more powerful. God is the ultimate source of all things. Yes, that's unquestionable. No doubt about it. The reason that I say the decision is the most powerful thing in the world is that we make a decision to be included in that with God for eternity or not. And so a decision is the most powerful thing in the world, even when it comes to that sort of thing, to accept God's love and to be a part of it. Then there's everything else that we do. You know, every building is built because there was a decision made to build it. Every job was taken because a person decided to take the job. Of course, that isn't a free society, clearly. But these sorts of things are just important to know. Every human being is around because of a decision that was made. I mean, there's decisions in everything. And sometimes there's easy decisions, sometimes there's weighty decisions, but learning how to make decisions, particularly difficult decisions, or really any decision at all, it makes sense. And there's actually ways that we can become better at it by just using the experience and the thought process of people who are good at it.
Well, when I go to a restaurant with my wife, she'll often pick two menu entrees and have a hard time deciding between the two. And she even does the eeny, meeny, miny, moe. And then when she lands on the one she would land on, if she's not happy, she knows it's the other one. So it's a quite involved process. But I'd guess you have maybe, you know, some more serious tips for how we get started with that process and what to keep in mind when we make those difficult decisions.
Did you ever see Princess Bride?
You know, I'm a bad husband, bad boyfriend. No, I didn't.
Oh, okay. Well, there's a funny scene in there about decision as to this person was trying to poison somebody. It was a comedy, and which glass did they put it in and why? Anyway, the whole scenario just painted there sounds a little bit like that. So here's the thing. You know, one of the things that I encourage people to do is to remember that you want to measure the speed of the decision to the weight of the issue. And that's why if you're out on a Saturday night with your wife and this is an opportunity to just go relax and enjoy something and to look forward to it, taking that time for the meal and deciding and having fun with it is just so appropriate to the circumstance that it can actually elevate the experience, right, to look at this process. But it doesn't work if you've got a really quick lunch meeting that you're trying to squeeze in between two meetings. And this is one of those things that people do, is that you'll see people that will take, you know, an enormous amount of time trying to decide where to go to a restaurant and what to eat during a work day where they don't have very much time, and yet at the same time they'll whimsically buy a car on the weekend. So we have to measure the speed of the decision to the weight of the issue, and this is one of those things that really, really matters. Now, Glenn, we've talked forever about how prudence really is the core of this, because prudence, really, one of the greatest ways to understand prudence, it's the mastery of decision making. It's more than that, but that's true. And while this isn't formally part of the talk today, it can't be missed that prudence really is to to desire what is good, to know what is real, and then to pursue what is good. So at the bedrock of everything we're talking about, if you don't desire what is good in a relationship, for your work, for society, for other things you're doing, then you're going to have a difficult time knowing what is actually real. And then you certainly can't pursue what is good. So these things are really essential to this thing. And then once that happens, in a similar way, I always tell people the first step is make your decision for the good of everyone involved to the best you can, degree that you can. Now, by the way, even the decision to fire somebody at work, and you think, oh my goodness, they have children and, you know, this is going to be stressful for them. Well, if you're considering those things, then you want to mitigate the pain that is associated with that. But at the same time, if the person is incompetent in their role and they're hurting all sorts of clients and customers in the business, or they're an incompetent pilot and there's passengers at risk, you're still going to there's going to be some pain involved in this decision, but you're doing it for the good of all involved, and you're measuring these circumstances together.
Making decisions, what we're looking at today with Dave Durand, and keeping the good of all, the best good of all in mind. Difficult, we think often kind of in this industry, there's stories already of media having a tough time and end of year layoffs coming and things like that. And when someone is tasked with laying those people off, a very, very tough decision, but keeping the greatest good in mind, I imagine, is the point.
You know, that's one of those things when you think about it, the true, the good, and the beautiful, those things which raise our hearts to the highest level, right? They're interesting when we understand and we look at how these things bring happiness and joy to us and awe to us. We are generally awestruck by truth. I mean, by capital T truth, Christ, clearly. But all truths are like pretty awesome to us. Now, sometimes we don't like them because they're not convenient for our life. But when we have our heart in a pure place, it's amazing. And, you know, what is good, people like it. And what is beautiful, people like that too. Which is why we use those terms for things that seemingly don't make them match. Clearly, this is a beautiful sunrise or sunset. This is a beautiful person. This is a beautiful picture. But there are circumstances that we find beautiful too, like, wow, that meeting was beautiful, the way that played out. And so what I really want to ask a person is, what are you creating? What are you creating? Is it true? I made a post about this the other day. Is it true what you're trying to do at work? Is it good? Is it beautiful? When you want to build a great company, build a company that is centered on truth, what is good and what is beautiful. And when you make decisions that way, sometimes they don't feel so much like that. But at the end of the day, when you see them in the big picture and the way they fit, they can ultimately enter into that space.
Now, one of the things you talk about here is when we make those difficult decisions, and again, kind of thinking in the management situation here, clarity on motives. We may have our reasons for making the decisions we do, but to a degree, do we owe it to the people whose lives are being affected by those decisions to have clarity so they can see it's not just a capricious decision? They woke up one day and decided, oh, we want to do it completely differently than how you've been doing it.
Yeah, well, there's two things here that I think are really important to what you're saying. One is you need clarity on motives because, you know, self-justification is the second strongest motivator for human beings. And so we do this sort of thing all the time. Oh, you know, Lord, I have a new book coming out and I would really like it to be a bestseller, you know, for the people. Okay, right. Well, you know, I'm sure that's a part of it, but we have these other motives that are there. So we have to be careful that even if we've got two motives that are fine and aligned and good, we're not being driven by the one that's lesser of the two. And really kind of examining this with other people or even with the spiritual director, these are things that are important to do. So we want clarity on motives, but then we also need clarity on communication because, and we're going to, Glenn, you know, I have a list in front of me here. So we're going from 1 to 2 to 4. We can go back to 3, but you need to be, we all need to be very effective and compassionate and articulate when we are presenting our communication plan on difficult decisions. Because in most circumstances, difficult decisions go well for some people, meaning if the decision affects a lot of people, it's going to affect some people positively and then other people negatively. And we need to be able to communicate things as best as possible. You're never going to be able to please everybody on it, but to be effective in that matters.
We'll talk about those hard decisions and how to be the most effective and, you know, clear and even loving way about how we do those hard decisions. Dave Duran continues with us as Morning Air rolls on. Plus, Thanksgiving Story Corner coming up before the end of the hour. All on the way here at Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app. Having some fun on the eve of Thanksgiving. Glenn and Sarah on Morning Air in for John today here as we continue on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app. Coming up after the top of the hour, we'll get into the Patrick Madrid Show, doing a great job filling in this week. Father Matthew Spencer. That's right. A chance to hear him again. Enjoy that coming up in just a few minutes. Story Corner on the way as well. Now we continue our conversation with Dave Duran, who brings us so many good success and leadership tips, talking about making those tough decisions today, too. And Dave, one of the things in, you know, making the announcement of a tough decision better, and the implementation as well, for that matter, is really, I imagine, conviction in the desired outcome.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt about it. If we see, when we're about to make a decision, it's one of the reasons that's interesting, you know, just talking about like apologetics. There's a lot of people who are afraid to read something that challenges the truth. Okay. So they'll say something like, I don't need to read that. I already know what's true. Okay. Well, if you're in a discussion with somebody else and you're talking about the faith and you both claim to love Christ, and this particular person has never heard of or recognized or seen, for example, something like John chapter 6, you know, the Eucharist, where it's very boldly, you know, not implicit, but explicit in Scripture and throughout the Scriptures and whatnot, and historically, all that kind of stuff, let alone miracles and everything else. And they say, well, I don't want to read that. I don't need to read that. Well, what I've always thought is, listen, I have complete conviction in the fact that it is there, but if you could show me that it's not there, then I would believe what is true. And if you can't show me, now I've fortified my own convictions, which is a good thing. Like, in other words, when we are comfortable with pursuing the truth because it is true, we no longer fear what it is we're going to find because we want to pursue what is true. This is kind of the same thing when it comes to decision making. One of the differences is that we can't always know we've made the perfect decision. There are some times we will have strong conviction, put the thought process out as best as we possibly can, and we ended up making a decision that is not the best one. It just didn't turn out very well, and that happens at times. So there's some fear. But the more conviction we have in the desired outcome, the better off we're going to do. And that's why I worded that way, actually, Glenn, in the desired outcome. It's not conviction in the absolute known outcome, but it's in the desired outcome. Because if we have a conviction in the desired outcome and we've thought this process through, we're going to get pushback by certain people. And as soon as we become soft on what it is we're doing after it's been well thought through and considered, now all of a sudden we're in this middle ground area where you sometimes make the half decision and you can't really get to where it is you need to go. So you make the full decision.
And so important, that just a key part of leadership really is conviction in what we're deciding. And unless we're a fabulous actor, if, like you say, we are focused on the best true outcome with the, you know, goodness as the aim there, ultimately for the most people possible, if we're not focused on that, we better be a good actor if we're trying to get people to follow that decision we've made.
Yeah, I agree. And by the way, I got to say, it's so much less fun talking with you and not bantering about the Vikings and the Packers. And I'm just not in a position to do it this year, but there are like 15 different analogies that I could have used to set up each one of these points. And it's killing me that I haven't done it, man. I'm just telling you that right now. But I made the decision because of my Packers fan vulnerability this year not to do it. And that brings me to my last point. Willingness to accept the pain involved in the change.
Well, they haven't changed quarterbacks yet over there in Green Bay. You know.
That's true, and there's one thing that still hasn't changed about the Vikings.
Oh, and yes, there's more room in the trophy case, or as the guy the last time I had a tour. We
have a lot of room there, and there's way too much time. Way too much time left in the season for this to still go bad for them. Anyway, willingness to accept the pain. When you're going to make a decision, when anybody's going to make a decision, there's going to be pain. And as soon as we run from the pain, as soon as we make the decision, but the pain begins, and then we run back and we undo our decision, now, again, we're generally in a pretty ugly place. So we have to just get ourselves to the point where we need to do this. This is something that I routinely go through with many people when I consult with them in business. And it is, listen, I can tell you, this particular person or this group of people for your organization have not been good for your organization, and here are the reasons why. And, you know, if it has to do with just skill or talent or wrong seat on the bus, I always encourage to retain and keep and move them in place. But there are some times where a person is actually destroying the culture, and they usually do this sort of thing quietly and passive-aggressively. They don't like to be seen or known. But you can see a pattern, because when they go from this person or that department or this person, there's this wake of negativity and cultural disruption that takes place, which undermines decision-making, all these things. So, but they're usually charismatic, and they've usually convinced you that they're the reason the organization's held together. There's a particular type of person like this. And many people are saying, if they're listening, I get that. I know who that person is. Others are missing the point, but working with that person and not knowing why things are going so bad in the organization. Anyway, there's pain when you make that sort of move. And and that's just one example of the many different moves that you make, because you're going to remove somebody and there's some fear of that. Well, what if other people quit? What if other people question that decision? What if other people are committed and tied to that person in loyalty, but not yet to the person I'm going to replace them with, or whatever? And you know what? Every single time that I have worked with an organization on that or done it myself, it has gone well. Because you recognize the patterns, and so making the tough decision to either replace or promote or move a person in certain positions, if it's done right and thought through the right way, the pain is less than you'd think, but you have to be willing to accept it in the short term in case it's there.
Hey, Dave, fun question for you with just a minute left. Say you're a multi-billionaire, and you buy a very publicly followed company, and you want to make changes. Do you announce those in the press and then fire half your staff and then just kind of see what happens and hope everybody still follows you?
Oh, we need a whole show on this. I would have so much fun with this show and dicing down almost like a sports commentator on what's happening right there with, wow, what an incredible pass. That was amazing. And, oh, that play wasn't very thought through. But, oh, look, that was a fake. there are so many things, ultimately speaking, there that I may not agree with every single approach, but I am really digging what he's trying to get done.
Oh, interesting task he has. Well, hey, Dave, thank you so much. I appreciate your good advice week in and week out for all these years here on Morning Air on Relevant Radio. More success and leadership, Lord willing. Next week there with Dave Durand. Right now, Morning Air continues here on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app, getting you in the mood for Thanksgiving with another Thanksgiving Story Corner. And I gotta say, it's my all-time favorite Thanksgiving Story Corner here. Our story today called The Bag Lady and Thanksgiving Dinner by Ed Price. It was a very cold night. Light snow was falling as young Jimmy Dorsch piloted his Ford Escort down the street toward the city park. Snow on Thanksgiving was a rarity in this part of the country, and it caused almost as much excitement as the traditional turkey dinner, the traditional afternoon of football, or the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade on TV. But none of these things were on 17-year-old Jimmy's mind at the moment as he carefully maneuvered his car over the blacktop. He had his own tradition to tend to, and he was looking for what he'd probably find in that deserted park. Usually bustling with activity, even on cold days, the park was practically empty now. Everyone was home with friends and family enjoying their Thanksgiving turkey. Jimmy was tempted to have a bit more dinner himself, but his second helping sat on the car seat beside him, along with a big hunk of Mom's homemade pumpkin pie and a thermos full of hot coffee. Jimmy wouldn't succumb to temptation and eat more today. For the past 2 years, Jimmy had established a tradition for himself. He had never suffered a hungry day in his life. The son of an unwed teenage mother, he was given up for adoption as an infant and taken in by a Christian family. When he was 15, to honor his Lord as well as his parents, he decided to take his second helping of Thanksgiving dinner to the park to share with a homeless man or woman. His first year, he found a man who'd been on his own since he was 13. In the summer, he worked odd jobs, but in the winter, he lived at the local rescue mission where he earned an occasional dollar by cleaning up the place. The second year, he shared his Thanksgiving dinner with an elderly man whose wife had died long before and his children had moved away to another city. They never contacted their father or offered to help him in any way. "I reckon they're ashamed of me," said the roomy old man. Throughout the year, Jimmy had often thought about the two men. He'd gone to the mission to try and find them, but they were gone without a trace. Now Jimmy wondered who he'd meet this Thanksgiving. As soon as he arrived at the park, he saw a ragged woman sitting hunched over on the bench of one of the heavy concrete picnic tables provided by the city. She wore an old battered red coat and a dark wool cap over her matted graying hair. Close beside her was the tattered bag that carried all her worldly possessions. Jimmy pulled the car into the parking place and got out. He took the covered dish and the thermos from the front seat and began walking toward the bag lady. When he stood in front of her, she jumped as if she'd suddenly been awakened from dozing. She looked up at Jimmy, and suddenly her eyes brightened. She started to speak, but instead she lowered her head and stared at the frozen ground. "God bless you, ma'am," said Jimmy, smiling. "I brought you some Thanksgiving dinner. Would you do me the honor of sharing it with me?" The woman looked at the food. She was very hungry. She hadn't eaten since last night's dinner at the mission. She nodded, and Jimmy served her food, uncovered the plates, put a napkin and silverware on the cold concrete picnic table, and poured a steaming cup of coffee for her. Then he watched as she ate. Although it was very cold in the park, he felt warm inside. The God of love was clearly at work within him. He loved his tradition, and he intended to continue it, and more, for the rest of his life. When the woman had finished, he cleared the table and put the dishes into a pile. He poured another cup of coffee into her styrofoam cup and then closed the thermos. Then he reached into his wallet and pulled out a $20 bill. He thrust the money into her gnarled hand. Then he reached over and kissed her lightly on the forehead. "May God richly bless you, ma'am," he said softly, "and thank you for giving me the honor of sharing my Thanksgiving dinner with you." And with that, Jimmy picked up his dishes and returned to the car. She'd stayed in the city purposely to see him grow, but remained carefully in the background and out of sight so she'd not embarrass him or cause him pain. Her own life was a shambles, time spent in state mental hospitals and at other times living on the streets. But she'd seen him grow into manhood and was very proud of his many accomplishments. Today she longed to tell him who she was, but could not bring herself to do it. Instead, she thanked God that he had so richly blessed her today, in spite of her trials. Tears welled up in her eyes. She'd seen her son on Thanksgiving, and he had loved his mother. Matthew 23:11, "The greatest among you will be your servants." That's our story today. If you'd like to get another listen, access the archives at relevantradio.com for Glenn's Story Corner, or in podcast form available too on the Relevant Radio app. And we always welcome your story suggestions, things you've come across, or even written yourself. Simply email them to morningair@relevantradio.com. Hope it's a blessed weekend for you and beyond as we get into Thanksgiving and then Advent. Thanks for joining us this morning. Thanks as well for the good work from producer Gabby and Sarah pushing all the right buttons this morning. Thank you so much for joining us, and continue to listen on Relevant Radio. Father Matthew Spencer is coming up right around the corner. News headlines next here on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app.